Are there any nurses here? Any educators? Okay, just wanted to see who I'm talking to. All right, so I'm going to be talking today about certified nurse midwives and them being the key to increasing access to maternity care in rural Georgia. And I know it says educators, but I actually meant to say attendees, but the objective is to explain the significance of increasing access to maternity care in Georgia, identify the policies that can be, identify policies that can be modified to address this public health issue and explain how programs can encourage engagement in policy. So I have no disclosures, no financial relationships or other type of relationships. Okay, so currently, right now, there's a 52% deficiency or complete absence of maternity care to of providers in rural Georgia for maternity care. And they're expecting that it's going to increase 75% by 2020 if nothing happens. So there are many causes, but the main causes are because there's not enough recruitment or retention of OB care providers. There's actually only one in... there's only one OBGYN per 7,125 women in the state. They're at an alarming rate. The maternity unit closures is ridiculous. Like, it's constantly closing down. Like, where I live at in Augusta, Georgia, the next maternity care maternity unit that's actually open in the hospital is actually 2.5 hours away. So, and I didn't realize it was that bad until I was pregnant last year, and my midwife told me if something happens between here and there, because I didn't want to have my baby in Georgia, in Augusta, we really have to drive all the way out there to Atlanta, and that amazed me. So many women have had babies on the I-20, okay, because there's no hospitals in between, or maternity units in between. There's not enough practicum sites, and as well as preceptors. And there's also not enough interprofessional collaboration, and the state policies, of course, is an issue. So this affects the mothers as well as the babies. Georgia's have the second highest maternal mortality rate in the whole entire country, and the eighth highest infant mortality rate in the country. And this affects rural women more than it does non-rural women. And here's the percentage right there. In 2012, the maternal mortality rate in rural Georgia was 24.3% compared to 16.5% in non-rural Georgia, as far as the women. Some other effects is 1 million women who reside in these rural areas are at greater risk of experiencing maternal death, and the infants are also more likely to die from those women who didn't receive prenatal care. One experience that I have found at the hospital where I work at is that there are women who come literally like 2 hours away just to get care for like preeclampsia or other issues. And it's a shame to say that I have known women who have died because they haven't had enough time to get the care that they need. And a lot of the access is due to, you know, not having transportation or just not enough providers in that area. So the key to access is nurse midwives, certified nurse midwives. Now, for me being a nurse, of course I'm going to advocate for nurse midwives, but also there are also certified professional midwives as well. And where I live at in Augusta, there are three midwives. Two of them are nurse midwives, and one of them is a certified professional midwife. And the nurse midwives, they're not actually allowed to actually deliver. I don't want to say allowed, but they don't let them deliver. And all they do is the prenatal care. And the professional midwife, because, you know, she's a professional midwife and not a nurse, she actually does more of the births at home. So she does the home birth. So majority of people who do want to have a midwife, because that's what I was looking into when I was pregnant, I was looking for a midwife, I went to her. Now, of course, you know, you want to ask, you want to make sure that this person is knowledgeable, right? They go by evidence-based practice, and she was the best qualified. And anything after that, there's no other midwives until you get all the way to Atlanta, Georgia, and which is, like I said, 2.5 hours away. There was a birthing center, which was in Columbia, South Carolina, but they closed down last year. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. So a way to increase the certified nurse midwives to help the situation is we need to change the policies to integrate more advanced practice registered nurses, such as nurse midwives and nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, and certified registered nurse anesthetists into healthcare, or especially in rural healthcare. So what is a certified nurse midwife? some people think, oh my God, they still use midwives? Yes, they still use midwives. A certified nurse midwife is, this is what is defined by the American College of Nurse Midwives. It's a registered nurse who graduated from a nurse midwifery education program, and they also pass. They also have to pass a national certification exam to receive the professional designation of certified nurse midwives. There are many pros to using certified nurse midwives. CNM students are more likely than OBGYN students, residents, to actually seek employment in a shortage area, research has found. And not only that, plus certified midwives, they have found that in every setting, they have midwife-led maternity care results in reduced infant and mortality, maternal mortality and morbidity, fewer medical interventions, decreased cost, increased savings, and improved client satisfaction. But of course, it's always a preference too, because some people just want an OB and that's okay. But at the same time too, if somebody wants a certified midwife, we know that they provide just as great care as an OB does, right? Okay, some more pros is that in the state of Georgia, Georgia has the fourth highest number of certified nurse midwives, 458, and CNMs actually desire to want to work in the rural areas. And what they have found also is that where a student, if a student works or do their practicum when they're in school in a rural area, they're more likely to stay there. So now here's some of the issues. The CNMs, like I was saying before, are mostly concentrated in the Atlanta area. It's very spotty throughout the state of Georgia, and I don't have a map to show you, and I should have put it in there, but it's very spotty where they are outside of the Atlanta area. I know one thing that they're doing, and the one midwifery school that's the physical location is at Emory University in Atlanta. They just started in the process of starting a nurse midwifery program in Valdosta, and that's all the way like in the southern part of Georgia, which is like the, it's not too far from the Florida state line, but it's still, we're still working on it. And there's also some like online schools, but they still need to find nurse midwives to be their preceptors. And there's not enough intercollaboration with physicians and other health professionals. As I was saying before, there's not enough preceptors and there's not enough practicum opportunities and continuing education opportunities. Okay, so here's the policy. There's a policy that can actually probably kind of fix this, but it needs to be modified so that nurse midwives can be integrated into the process. So we have the Georgia Preceptor Tax Incentive Program, or the Georgia PTIP. Now this program, this policy, it provides $10,000 income tax credit to primary care providers who act as preceptors, and they precept third and fourth year Georgia medical resident students and advanced practice registered nurses and physician assistants. Now, the problem is that how they define a preceptor. They define the preceptor as a physician, okay? Now, the issue is that with this is that a nurse midwife, the model that the nurse midwife goes or follows and the model that the OB model follows is two different things, because the OB follows the medical model, whereas the midwife follows the nursing model, okay? So it does, even though it's okay for a midwife, if they have to, they can be precepted by a physician, it's still better for them to be precepted by a physician, because, for example, like an OB, right, they focus more on if something goes wrong. Midwives only deal with a healthy woman, okay? So if a woman has any type, if she has preeclampsia or if something crazy happens, she needs to go to an OB. All right, so that's where the differences happen. And as far as accessibility, as I said before, this is just an issue for CNMs finding preceptors. And research has found that if they had an incentive or something to come out there, they would go, even like on a regular, like baccalaureate level, and if you're trying to find clinical sites, a lot of them can't find clinical sites in the rural area because there's not enough clinical instructors to go out there. So, the policy modification that we're looking to change is to change the term of preceptor, to change the definition. If we just change it to not only being a physician, but also being an advanced practice registered nurse, then things can change. So what now? So my thing is, let's take it a different approach, right? So the different approach is like this. Usually when you're talking about policy, it's always the same people all the time who's always engaged in policy. It's always the same faithful few, right? So I'm thinking, okay, well, how about we start a culture of engagement, right? And then what research has found is if you start very, very early on, when, like, let's say, for example, as far as nursing, but this can be applied to other healthcare programs as well, if you start at the baccalaureate level, things can change. But we just have to start from the beginning, and we actually have to start something, right? And seek also collaboration to do so. So as far as nurses, and just, I guess, other, and the same thing relates also with other areas as well, other professionals. You have the skill set, but most people don't know how to translate those skill sets into policy or how to deal with policy, right? For example, with nurses and I guess other professionals, healthcare professionals as well, we have, we're good at problem solving, communicating, influencing and persuasion, because if you have a patient who is not complying with their medication, a nurse will know how to deal with that patient to be more compliant, right? Critical thinking skills, collaboration, analysis, this is all dealing with policy, just trying to figure out, okay, how can I show people how to use these skills to engage in policy? And I talked about that, when does it start, and I think, yes. Okay, so so according to the research, they say that nursing students are socialized into the profession during their educational experience. So whether this is the baccalaureate part or those who are doing associate degree, this is where they get used to doing things. Whatever they start here, this is what they're going to continue on for the rest of their nursing career. And I believe this is the same thing as well for other health professionals. So this is three options to do this, okay? And this will depend on the time, the resources, the cohort size, and the program. And the framework and resources that I used was from the University of Kansas Community-Based Toolkits. And discussing about, they have little toolkits to help with like advocating for change and influencing policy development. Okay, so the first option would be to integrate the health policy throughout the whole entire program. So every semester throughout the program, you would find something, some type of policy, right, integrated to that course. For example, in nursing, we have, there's always med-surg, right, or a medical surgical, and that's the basis of acute care. And if we're learning about, like trying to advance, okay, here's a perfect one. So with advanced practice registered nurses, right, one of the issues in many states is that they can't sign prescriptions. They can't give out prescriptions, right? So you can come up with a policy like that, and then you can show the students, okay, how do we integrate this into, how does this relate to the med-surg part, right? And you can teach them from the beginning, okay, well, this is how you look at a policy, this is how you engage in it and take it to your legislator, different things like that. And if you do that every single semester, then it becomes ingrained in them, right, by the time they graduate. So you would hope, fingers crossed, that they would continue this after they're done. Another thing would be dedicate a semester to teach health policy and community, and most programs are like this. But a lot of the times what happens is that when you're teaching a health policy course, it can be very dry, and if you're not as passionate about it as many of us are, then they're not really trying to hear you. So you have to integrate, you have to engage, you have to make it what you're teaching very palatable, so make it tasteful, make it enjoyable for the students so they can put their hand to it so they can really understand what you're doing. And another option, which I think is real easy to start to do with any place, is whether you do a forum or a three-hour course, like just dedicate one class throughout that entire course, you can engage them in that way. Okay, so this is an example of it, okay? So it starts with 9 steps. So number one, find an issue, all right? And then for this situation, what we're talking about, I'm going to talk about like the whole there not being enough maternity care providers in rural Georgia, right? So you find an issue, you have to be passionate about it, make sure that they do their research and know the opposing view. This is what you want to tell the student. This is step one. Step two, find a policy relating to the issue, whether it be old or new, in the works or non-existent. So in the one that we're going to be talking about is the Georgia PTIP policy, okay? Next step, you want to get support. You want to collaborate with others who are interested in the same thing, whether it's your fellow nurses or, in this respect, we're talking about nursing students, right, or whatever type of student, and other disciplines. So with the Georgia PTIP, the physician assistants, because I think it would be good for them if they found another physician assistant, even though they follow the medical model as well, but if they had a physician assistant who can precept them, perhaps that would help alleviate the issue as well, right? And here are some other possible collaborators, such as ARP, PTAs, teachers associations, healthcare providers, insurers, other policymakers, universities, organized labor unions. And I talked about some of that stuff. And right, so okay, so step four, find out who your policymaker is, right? You find out the chain of command at your institution, the legislator, the local, state, and federal. So for example, with nursing students, for example, many nurses go to work in the hospital when they're done, right? So it does not necessarily have to be, oh, speaking to your legislator. It could just be learning how to go to your nurse manager or go to the chief nursing officer or whoever and teach and letting them know, okay, this is a policy that isn't right or needs to be modified and we can do that. Because, especially with me, because I deal with so many students at the hospital, they're so scared a lot of the time, especially even after their first, second, third year. They don't want to do it, and a lot of times you'll find, and I have many friends who are like this, I just want to go to work, clock out, and go home. But at the same time, too, they see the issues or policies that are not working, but they just don't want to deal with it because either they don't think that they can do anything about it, they don't know how to do it, or they just don't want to deal with it. But if you have the tools in place, and if you actually have a desire to do something, at least you know what to do. And this at this part, this is during the class, this would be a good part also to tell them to take out your laptops. It's okay to use your smartphones, right? Find out who your legislator is. Are you registered to vote? Go ahead and register to vote right now because many many states offer it online where you can do everything online. And another thing also is you can actually provide a extra credit for that. Okay, because we want to build a culture of engagement. It's not just like in the healthcare aspect, but look at the way the state of politics right now. We don't have enough people voting. And they always talk about how millennials don't vote and this and that and blah, 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 blah. Well, this is a way to help engage them in this, okay? Contact them. Now, most people don't know that they can actually contact the legislators. How about that? And you know what, I'm ashamed to say this, but I didn't know that until recently, okay? So about a year and a half ago, I didn't know that this was something that you can actually do. So, and I thought to myself, I think I'm kind of smart, you know, just kind of. But if I'm feeling like this, I'm pretty sure other people are feeling the same way too. So you teach people, okay, well, how do you contact your legislator? Okay, write them a letter, an email. As a matter of fact, even if you don't even write all of that, you can go to, like, for example, the APHA. They have stuff that's already set up, and all you have to do is type in your address, put your name on there. You can fix it up if you want to, press send, and it's already done. Something as simple as that. You can go to your legislator in person, make an appointment, talk to them. Step six, meet with them. Okay, so these are certain things that you think that you shouldn't have to say, right? But you still have to say it. So be on time, look professional, right? Iron your clothes, one of those things. You know, I deal with a lot of, like, young folks, and sometimes, I guess, certain things that are common sense to us isn't so common to others, but, you know, just one of those things. Know what you're going to say. Be clear and concise facts. Don't give a long, drawn-out story. Know what you're talking about. And know what you're going to ask. Not just present the information, but also know what you're going to ask, because if you're giving them all this information, and then they're like, okay, and what do you want? And you can't tell them what you want, so they're not... They can't help you if they don't know what you want, right? And you can also, a good thing also to do is leave a clear and concise document so they can look back on it, because you don't know how many people they're going to meet today. You might be one of many, but if you have this piece of paper that you can leave with them, then they can always follow up with that. So this is something I created called the Riata Asking Criteria. Okay, so this is just something that you know that they can use when they actually speak to their policymaker. So Riata. R is for registered nurse is who I am. This is who I am. So let's say you're not a registered nurse, then it wouldn't be Riata, then it would be Wiata, right? So who am I? I. Include a short applicable story. Make it personable. Why does this matter to you? So when I went to go speak to my legislator about the Georgia PTIP, I just told him my story about, well, you know, I was pregnant last year. I had an issue where I had to actually go to the hospital. I was supposed to have this beautiful home birth, but it didn't work out like that, and I had to actually go to the hospital. I didn't want to go to the hospital in my area, so what ended up happening is I had to go all the way out to Atlanta. Between that time, anything could have happened, and I could have actually had the baby. So that's a problem that many, many people have. A is the add evidence when discussing problems and and solution, right? It's like what I was talking about with how things are going to get worse if they don't fix it. T, tell them what you want clearly and concise. A, and always consider your audience. And this is just a short little version of a successful ask. Include a story, add some facts, tell them what you want, always consider your audience. And this is basically like a little, either a letter or something that you can basically say to the legislator. Step 7, follow up. You know, let them know, great meeting you, just wanted to reiterate, I'm open to being your resource. Step 8, on to the next. With every single time you do it, you get better, it gets easier, and you're not as, oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to do this. It gets a whole lot easier, right? You want to build a relationship with your policymakers, which leads to trust, right? And you want to also continue to advocate in various ways. And you, step 9 is to encourage. Encourage the students to mail out the letter, right? So this is something that is done right there in the classroom. You can encourage them to mail out the letter or find another policy that they're interested in. You can Google it. You know, you can help them with that. Make sure that they use the Riata Acts criteria. Be persistent, encourage others to do the same. Okay, so putting it all together. So this is an indirect approach. We'll have the following results. Students will be taught how to engage in policy. They will be taught how to engage they will actually engage in policy, and once they're engaged, they'll probably continue, hopefully, fingers crossed, continue to do it and throughout their nursing career. And this is, like I said, this is what the research shows. So in conclusion, utilizing CNMs is an evidence-based option. It can work if we make it work and if we push for the policy to change. The Georgia PTIP definition of preceptor should be modified to include APRNs. And the nursing, as well as other health program organizations or groups, can translate current skill sets to engage in policy with policymakers using 9 interactive steps. So once again, I feel that this is something that can not only be used in nursing, but also with other healthcare organizations and professions as well. So this can be taught not only in the school section, but also if you want to engage your association members. And those are my references, and that's it. Thank you very much.